Lekulam. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Good evening in Israel, and I guess good morning for you in Canada. I would like to begin today's shiur. Thank you, Rabbi Kelman, who will hopefully join us at some point for arranging the shiur. And I want to give a shiur today about the crisis conversion in Israel, which we don't really need a reason why to talk about the crisis of conversion in this country, because it really is continuing for a very long time. However, I do want to discuss this issue specifically now, as we are in the next few weeks preparing ourselves for Chag Shavuot. And Chag Shavuot seems to have a direct connection to this topic of conversion. As you know, there is a minhag to read Megillat Rut over Shavuot, and it's sometimes not very clear why, of all Megillot, was Rut chosen to be read on Shavuot. The cynics will say because everything else was taken up on the other Chagim. What do you want us to read? Eicha? That's on Tisha B'Av. Esther is on Purim. Shir Hashir Mizbah Pesach, Kohelet, not sure, Sukkos. Okay, we're left with Ruth, what can we do? And there are different suggestions why we read Megillat Ruth on Shavuot. However, I think that the main reason has to do with the main idea of Megillat Ruth, which is a book about a woman who converts. She leaves her family behind and joins the Jewish people. And that might be a theme of Chag Shavuot. Because on Chag Shavuot, the entire Jewish people went through the process of conversion. And if that's true, then it would seem fair to argue that in the same way, every Pesach night, we gather around the Seder and we go through Yitziat Mitzrayim, not only in our minds, but the mitzvah is to actually feel that we're going through Yitziat Mitzrayim. And if on Sukkot, we are commanded to sit in a sukkah in order for us to feel that we are in the process of leaving Egypt and we are reliving the Yitziat Mitzrayim, so it would be fair to say that Matan Chag Shavuot is the Chag in which we are supposed to relive the Torah being given to us and us accepting it, but it's also about going back to Har Sinai, where the original conversion of the entire Jewish people occurred, and therefore Chag Shavuot is telling us perhaps that every year when we enter the Chag, we must relive the conversion and re-go, if you want, through this process of conversion. So therefore, I believe that the topic of today's shiur is relevant more than ever because of our preparation for Chag HaShavuot, for the Chag of Gerut. As you know, during the years that Israel has been established, the question of conversion and the question of Mihu Yehudi has never been agreed upon. And every so often, the question, the debate comes up again and again and becomes a heated debate, a political debate, and possibly it's one of the reasons why we can't figure out a way to have a constitution, because Mil Yehudi and the questions of conversion would of course be an essential piece of this constitution. In the 90s, when we had a big wave of immigration from the USSR of the past, this question came up more and more of what should we do with the fact that for the first time in Israel's history, we are facing a situation in which we might have an actual threat of assimilation. Now, when I use the word threat, I don't mean the word threat that it's the numbers are not that high that it's a threat to the existence of the Jewish people or of the state of Israel. But in a funny way, I would say we have so many tzaras, that the one tzara that we didn't have here in Israel was assimilation, and here, Baruch Hashem, we are faced with another tzara that we never had, and the threat of assimilation really started becoming a real thing with the immigration of hundreds of thousands of people that were not halachically considered Jewish. As you know, the law of return, which is a beautiful law based upon the Nuremberg laws that understand that that we cannot define Jewish identity any different than the Nazis did, because how can we turn to a person who says to us, I was good enough for Hitler to be Jew and for you I'm not. So the law of return really was based upon this moral issue, which I think is a very sensitive one, and a very, I think we can really agree that it came from a very, very sensitive place. And it basically permitted many, many people to make aliyah under the law of return, even though halakhically they are not recognized as Jews. And then came the 90s, and instead of having one, two people like that, we suddenly realized that there are close to 300,000 people in this country that talk Hebrew and really feel Jewish, and according to Orthodox law, halacha, are not Jewish. Their father was not Jewish. And here came the dilemma, what to do in this situation. I'm sure you heard a lot about the different Batei Din that were established at this point. At the time, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, pushed for establishing a new type of Batei Din that would convert many of these Olim in a way that would be more sensitive and a bit more lenient. However, at some point, there were many people in the country that were very upset about this and argued that they will not recognize this conversion. At the same time, there were people on the radical, a bit more radical, who argued, let's just do massive conversion like we did at Har Sinai. At Har Sinai, we didn't check everyone coming into Har Sinai, where they're coming from. We just, in one event at Har Sinai, they were all converted. So let's do the same. At the same time, people argued, wait a second, what about Kabbalat Mitzvot? Accepting Mitzvot surely is a very important piece of the process of conversion. And that today does not really exist. So these are part of the questions and dilemmas that came up. And it really blew up at some point when there were certain rabbis that came out and declare that they will not recognize certain Batei Din's conversions. That really was a terrible, terrible event. I remember this. A few years ago. It was a really terrible thing that certain rabbis would not recognize other rabbis' conversions. And the people that went through the conversions can you imagine how they felt? It was very difficult. So today, I'm not coming to necessarily to suggest answers of what to do. What I am, however, trying to do today is trying to understand what should the mindset be when we come to deal with this sensitive issue. Those of you who have been following the shiur in the past few weeks, one of the ideas that I'm trying to push during this shiurim is that since 1948, State of Israel has created many challenges that require the rabbis in the halachic world to rethink the way they look at the reality in front of us. It was because for 2,000 years, we never dealt with this construction of a state. We dealt with individuals or maybe kehillot, communities, but never have we dealt with a state. And my argument during these shirim, and it's going to happen again today, will be to, my argument will be that we need to change the way we view the reality before us. And I would like to explain why the whole approach to conversions nowadays has to be different from the core than the whole conversion of the past hundreds of years. I'll begin by saying that there is a certain attitude that many people are aware of, that when people come and to a Beit Din today, around the world, almost in every place in the world, and they wish to convert, I have no idea, there might be people listening to us right now that went through this process of conversion, and they probably know about this much more than I do. But I will say that there's a certain approach that became quite, I would say, regular today in the Jewish communities, that the first approach is to discourage the ger from conversion. And hello, can everyone hear me, by the way? Can people hear me? Can you wave if you can hear me? Someone said that they can't hear me. Yes, okay. Thank you. So, where was I? Someone just called to say that they don't hear me so well. So I'm just hoping that people can hear me. I'm going to continue. Hopefully that people are able to hear me. Okay, good. Excellent. So the approach has been many times, the beginning point has been to discourage people from converting. Usually the first meeting is, really? Are you crazy? Do you really want to go through this? Why are you here? Right? Meaning the first meeting with the ger many times is to try to discourage, to try to convince them that it's not a really smart thing to do. We bichlal in Judaism, unlike other religions, we don't run after conversion. We don't look for people to convert. If anything, it's exactly the opposite. And my question begins with, is that really the right attitude today? Should that be the attitude today in the state of Israel, where we have hundreds of thousands of Israelis who are not Jewish? When they wish to convert, should we also discourage them? My argument is not only should we not discourage them, but we should actually look for them. We should try to convince them to convert. And I'll explain where I'm coming from. Is there a mitzvah to convert people? Is there such a mitzvah? If you look at the source sheet that's in front of you right now, you will see that there is no mitzvah in the list of 613 mitzvot regarding converting the convert. However, there have been many, many rabbis that have challenged, why isn't there a mitzvah called converting the ger? Meaning, if a ger, if a non-Jew wants to become Jewish, he has to go through the process. Once he becomes Jewish, then he's chayav b'mitzvot. But is there actually a mitzvah to receive the ger, to accept the ger, to do the conversion? It seems that there is no such mitzvah. However, if you look at source number 4, one of the Rishonim, the Tashbates, questions, Ve'ani tamea, I am amazed. Lama lo hichnisu bichlal ha-mitzvot kabbalat gerim. He is amazed. Why isn't there no mitzvah, mitzvot, to accept the gear, to receive the gear? And there are certain rabbis during in past generations that have argued that there is actually a mitzvah to accept the ger. Where is it mentioned? If you look at source number 5, one of the great rabbis of the 20th century in Yerushalayim, or Kerla, argues that the mitzvah of accepting the ger is included already in a mitzvah that we all know. The mitzvah of Ahavat Hashem, in source number 5, he says, "Bemet tmi'ani al tashbetz." I'm surprised about the tashbetz, that he doesn't know shlo yada al ezem mitzvah nismechet mitzvah kabbalat agirim. How come he doesn't know that that there is a mitzvah to accept the ger, and it's based upon the mitzvah of ahavat Hashem? Wow, the mitzvah of loving Hashem is the same mitzvah as receiving a ger. Where did he get that from? So if you pay your attention to source number 6, to the Rambam's words in Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam tells us in great detail about the mitzvah to love God. He says the third mitzvah, I'm reading from the sheet, the third mitzvah is that we are commanded to love God. Now, what does this mitzvah include? The Rambam says explicitly, our rabbis have said that this mitzvah includes calling out to all mankind to serve God and to believe in Him. And the example that the Rambam brings is the famous Midrash about Avram and Sarah. That Avram and Sarah, says the Midrash, brought people into Judaism. Now, whatever that means, I'm not sure I understand what that means. In the days of Avram and Sarah, they were converting people. I'm not sure what that means. However, Rav Perla understood that the mitzvah of Ahavat Hashem, loving God, includes making God beloved by others. And therefore, introducing non-Jews into Judaism is part of the mitzvah of loving God. Now, I don't think Rav Perla meant when he said this, that Judaism encourages us to walk around the streets and ask people to come join our club. However, when there are people that are in this country that already have a connection to the land, to the people, to the tradition, I believe that this mitzvah would apply. The mitzvah of doing giyur. Furthermore, there are some that suggest that the mitzvah of receiving the ger is included in the special mitzvah of loving the ger. If you look at source number 2, you will see that the Sefer HaChinuch points out that there's a mitzvah le'ehov gerim. Now, what does that mean, that there's a mitzvah to love a ger? To love a ger, why would that be a mitzvah? There's a mitzvah to love every Jew. A ger is a Jew, and there's a mitzvah to love every Jew. Ve'avtal recha kamocha. Why do we need an extra mitzvah to love the ger? The answer, of course, is that many times, due to certain prejudices that we have, and that's very sad sometimes, people are always, sometimes they're suspicious to strangers, to people that come from the outside, and therefore the Torah commands us to make special effort to love the ger, to bring him in. And in source number 1, you will see that the Gemara mentions that there are special halachot and special mitzvot of how we have to be kind and sensitive to the ger. Some rabbis learn from here, from the mitzvah of loving the ger, of being kind to the ger, that we learn from here that there is a mitzvah to also receive the ger and to bring him into Judaism. I'll just bring you one last example how this mitzvah comes up in modern times. Rav Moshe Feinstein, source number 3, discussed a question whether or not it is correct to appoint a ger to be a Rosh Yeshiva. And I'm not going to go into the whole discussion right now why this was a question, but I will say that one of the reasons that Rav Moshe Feinstein brings down for ruling that a ger can be a Rosh Yeshiva is because of the mitzvah of Ahavat HaGer, shemichayevet otanu lekarvam ulakel bechol inyanam. Rav Moshe says the mitzvah of Ahavat HaGer means that we should be kind to them and receive them with love and be sensitive and kind to them. That is an essential part of how we treat the ger. So it could very well be that there is actually a positive mitzvah to receive the ger, and I suggest that this mitzvah would apply in today's time where there are people out there that are very confused about their Jewish identity. And I think it's our obligation, first of all, to recognize that we must be kind, we must offer our services to them, we must not discourage, but rather encourage them to come in to the Jewish people. Yes, I can see some of the chats going on. I'm sorry that I can't respond to all of them. I will try a bit later. So until now, we concluded that there may be a mitzvah out there to receive the ger, and we suggested that nowadays, more than ever, we should apply this mitzvah. And this mitzvah should lead us in our motivation to be kind and sensitive and to encourage people to convert rather than to discourage them. However, I think there's something much more important and relevant that must be discussed in the context of Gerut in today's time and age. And I'm specifically talking about the process here in Israel today during the past 50, 60 years in which we saw such a large wave of immigration from different countries from all over the world. What is the requirements from a ger? What does a ger actually have to do if he or she wishes to enter the Jewish people? So if you look again at the source sheet in front of you, you will see that Rambam, based upon the Gemara Masechet Pritut, I'm just going there really quickly, here we are, Rambam in source number 8, based upon the Gemara and Masechet Kritut, tells us that there are three things, okay? B'shlosha dvarim nichnesu Yisrael lebrit, b'mila, tvila, v'korban. In order for the Jewish people to become Jewish. Now, this is, by the way, a very big discussion in the Rishonim, whether or not the Jews prior to Har Sinai were halachically considered Jewish. For whatever that means right now, let's agree right now that Am Yisrael went through some form of conversion at Har Sinai. So what did we have there? We had Brit Milah. The males had a Brit. All the Jews, men, the males and the females, all went into mikvah, and we learn this from Psukim. As the Rambam will point out, if you go down a little bit in my source sheet, you will see that the Rambam quotes Psukim, right? Halacha Gimel, v'tfila ita b'midbar, kodem matan Torah, and he quotes a pasuk. Milah, he says the Rambam, brit milah ita b'mitzrayim. And finally, the third element was bringing a korban. It says in the Psukim, I'm highlighting the letters. The korban shneemar vayishlach et na'arei bnei Yisrael vayelu olot, meaning at Har Sinai there were sacrifices, there was a korban, there was a mizbeach. Says the Rambam, that's what happened as we left Egypt and stood at Har Sinai. We went through brit milah, korban, and tefillah in a mikvah, and therefore says the Rambam, Vechein ledorot, and therefore in each and every generation from then on, shirtze akum, when a non-Jew wishes to enter the covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ulistofef tachat knofei Hashchinah, v'yikabel lav ol Torah, and he accepts upon himself the Torah, she also needs, obviously, only males need the brit milah, but the tefillah and the korban. We can't do korban today, so there's no bet mikdash, but for males, they need a brit and they need to go to mikvah, and the females need to go to mikvah. What are the converts today required to do? They are basically required to return to Har Sinai, to relive the ma'amad of Har Sinai, and go through the same exact process that every Jew as if went through at Har Sinai. We are not demanding more than what happened at Har Sinai. Of course, what is the big elephant in the room right now? The Kabbalat Ol Torah. What is the requirement of Kabbalat Ol Torah? That, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the key questions that has been discussed endlessly throughout the generations in the process of conversion. Because even though the Rambam says that you need only physical actions of Brit Milah, of Tefillah and a Mikvah, and a Korban, right? These are all actions that theoretically anyone can go through. However, the Rambam does mention, almost as an afterthought, V'kabel ol Torah. It would seem that the whole idea of what's happening at Har Sinai is about Kabbalat ol Torah, is about receiving the Torah. And therefore the question, and that is the question, what level of Kabbalat ol Torah, what level of accepting Torah and mitzvot is required from the ger? I cannot go into this topic right now. This is one of the main topics that is discussed today. Are we able to be lenient? Can we look the other way as if? What happens if we know that the person in front of us is not going to accept everything and yet he says in his words that he is going to? There was one big posek of the 20th century, the chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Uziel, who argued that Kabbalat mitzvot may not be ma'akev. If you look at source number 11, Rav Uziel, one of the great chief rabbis of this country, made a statement in one of his books, which is very, very radical, that milchatchila, we really should require from the convert to announce that he or she are accepting mitzvot. However, milch b'dieved, if it's not done, there is room to accept them anyway. I have to say that this opinion, some claim, have been misunderstood. Rav Yisrael Rosen, who passed away not long ago, who was a brilliant Talmud Chacham and engineer, the founder of Machon Somet, those who know about it, argued that he was misunderstood and he never meant to make such a radical statement. He did mean to say that there's room to be lenient in the requirements that we have today for Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot. I'm not going to go into that too much right now, but I want to say the following, and this is the main point which I really want to get to today, because I think that this will shine some light on the whole on the whole discussion from a different perspective. We said before that the ger requires Brit Milah and Tevilah. Rabbi Soloveitchik, in his very famous essay, Kol Dodi Dofek, explained that when we left Egypt, we entered two covenants with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One he calls the covenant of fate, and one he calls the covenant of destiny, Brit Mitzrayim and Brit Sinai. At Mitzrayim, says Rav Soloveitchik, we entered a covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us as his people at Mitzrayim. But the question is, what made us his people? What was unique about the Jewish people? What connected us as a people when we were in Egypt? There was no Torah. There was no mitzvot. Therefore, suggests Rav Soloveitchik, that it was our fate that made us one people. In other words, we were a nation that all shared the same fate. If you want, from the perspective of Hitler and Amalek and the Mitzrim, they don't care who's religious and who's Sephardi and who's Ashkenazi and who's a Chassid and a Misnagid. From their perspective, we are all defined as Jews because we share the same fate. This means that an important component of the Jewish identity is that we are a nation, a le'om. However, when we came to Har Sinai, we entered another covenant, says Rav Soloveitchik. This is called the covenant of destiny. We at Har Sinai gathered together as a people and made a covenant with God in which we took upon ourselves an identity of Avodat Hashem, an identity of worshiping God, of religion, of Torah, of mitzvot. At that point, the identity of the Jewish people is that we are all obligated to keep Torah and mitzvot. The Torah is our identity. Says Rav Soloveitchik that the two steps that a ger must take, A, Brit Milah, and then Tefillah, symbolize these two covenants. The Brit Milah symbolizes the shared fate that we all have as one people, while the Tefillah in a mikveh symbolizes Kabbalat Torah, the second step, the covenant of destiny. Based upon this, we can read a Gemara that's very important. The Gemara in Masechet Yevamot tells us, what happens if a ger comes to us and says, listen, I want to convert. I will do a Brit Milah, but I'm very scared of water. I'm not entering any of your mikvahs. I'll do the Brit, no mikvah. Or the opposite, a ger says, I am not doing any circumcision. Are you crazy? Are you nuts? I'll go jump into a lake, but you're not doing any circumcision on me. The Gemara says, ger shemal velo taval, taval velo mal eino ger. The Gemara says, you can't make up your own identity. You need both. You need milah, you need tefillah. Based upon this, we can argue that if a non-Jew comes to us and says, I want to be part of the Jewish nation. I love the Jewish people. I want to celebrate their holidays. I want to walk around as being recognized as part of the Jewish nation. But I really am not interested in keeping any mitzvot. Or the opposite. If someone says, I'll do all the mitzvot. Oh, yeah, I'll put on tefillin. I'll go to shul. I'll fast Yom Kippur. I'll keep Shabbat, Kashrut, everything. But I really don't want to be part of the Jewish nation. I don't want to have anything to do with the Jewish people. I want to live in some island by myself. In those situations, we say, ger shemal v'lo taval v'lo mal eino ger. You can't. You can't be halfway. You can't do half of the process of becoming a Jew. Being a Jew is also being part of the Jewish nation, and it's also being part of the Jewish religion. As someone just mentioned now, we can now go back to Megillat Rut. In Megillat Rut, as Naomi is leaving the country and Rut is running after her, and Naomi turns to Rut and tries to discourage her and says to her, Rut, are you crazy? Are you nuts? Why are you following me? Stay back here, marry some nice guy. Do you realize what it means to be a Jew? And what does Rut answer? Her answer says it all. She answers the slogan of the Jewish identity. Ameich ami ve'elokaich elokai. Ameich ami is the covenant of fate. I share the same fate. I will enter the covenant of fate. I want to be part of the Jewish people. Ve'elokaich elokai. And I will also share the covenant of destiny and take upon myself Kabbalat Torah. I think this is a very important idea because it proves that Jewish identity has two components in it. Also the nationality side, and also the religious side. Rav Amital, the Rosh Yeshiva of Gush, used to point out, however, that from Rut, we don't just learn that there are two components. Rather, we learn that there's an order, that first the ger must enter the Ameich Ami, and only then do they enter the Elokaich Elokai. I want to point your attention, please, back to the source sheet, to something fascinating that I figured out just a few years ago. I said to you before that the custom till today in many, many Batei Din is to discourage the non-Jew from entering the Jewish people. Now, I see there are a lot of people listening to this shiur, which is wonderful. I can't really go around and asking everyone, but I want you to think to yourselves right now. If you could right now be a dayan in the Beis Din, and you were told that it's your job to discourage a ger from entering the Jewish people, how would you try to discourage the ger? What would you say? By the way, when I give this shiur to other people, I ask the people who listen to this shiur, and usually I get a lot of answers, some of them a bit funny. Some of them, people say, are you crazy? You want to keep Shabbos? What, Kashrus? You can't eat chazer anymore. You can't eat basar b'chalav anymore. What are you nuts? You have to fast so many fast days. Right? People start throwing all their hardships that they have when it comes to keeping certain rules. However, please notice in source number 7 that the Gemara says the following. Ger sheba lidgayer bazman hazeh. And nowadays, when a ger comes, omrim lo, ma ra'ita shebata lidgayer. Why are you coming to convert? Now listen carefully how we wish to discourage him. Iyata yodea shi Yisrael bizman hazeh dvuyim, dechufim, schufim, meturafim, v'yisurim ba'im alehem. Meaning, are you nuts? Do you want to enter the Jewish people when it's a terrible, when to be a Jew is so dangerous? Everyone hates the Jews. Pogroms, crusades, Inquisition, Holocaust. Are you crazy? There's so much anti-Semitism out there. Why do you want to join the Jewish people? Notice, we are not trying to discourage him because it's difficult to be a religious Jew. Rather, we are discouraging him because that being a part of the Jewish nation is difficult, meaning that the identity of a Jew and therefore the entrance into the Jewish community goes first through the acceptance of the nationhood, of Amei Chami. At which point, Im Omer Yodeyani, I know, and I still want to, Mekablim Tomiyad, we accept him. Now listen carefully. We teach him Miktzat mitzvot kalot u'miktzat chamurot. Okay, we teach him some mitzvot. Again, what would be the first mitzvot that you taught a non-Jew? The Gemara chooses leket, shichecha, upea, u'maser ani. Basically, all the mitzvot of tzedakah are mentioned here. The first mitzvot that we teach the non-Jew who wishes to become part of the Jewish people is Jewish responsibility, is arevut, kol Yisrael arevim zel hazeh, that we are a nation and that we're responsible to one another. Isn't that fascinating that the Gemara does not start with Shabbos or Kashrut? It starts with mitzvot sheben adam lechavero. That is the entrance to the Jewish identity. Now let's take all what we discussed now and apply it to our days. We are living today here in Israel with many, many young men and women that serve in the Israeli army, that speak Hebrew, that feel Jewish, and yet halachically are not Jewish. My argument, based upon what we learned at all now, is that many of these young men and women have entered the covenant of death, of fate with the Jewish people. When these people made Aliyah and chose to live in this country and to become part of the Jewish nation, it is true that they are not halachically recognized as Jews when it comes to the halachic identity. And it is true that there's no such thing as 50% Jewish or 90% Jewish. However, if the process, as we just argued, of Gerut is to first enter the covenant of fate, can we not argue that many, many of these Olim, Russians, Ethiopians, who live in this country, have, by sharing the fate of the Jewish people, have proven that they are already in the process of conversion? They're not strangers who are knocking on the door and we have to discourage or rethink if we want them. These are people that have already entered the process of conversion. And therefore, it is for sure our obligation and our mitzvah to help them and ease it for them to enter the full conversion. Again, I'm not suggesting today practically what should be done. That may be for another shiur or another time. My claim today is how our mindset should change. The attitude should change when we look at these people and what they've gone through and where we meet them in the next step. I want to point your attention to I find an amazing source of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who is not always quoted here in Israel by the rabbis who deal with the state of Israel questions. However, in a letter that Moshe Feinstein wrote regarding the status of Ethiopian Jewry, he says something very, very interesting. It is true that Rav Moshe Feinstein, unlike Rav Avadi Yosef and other rabbis, did not accept the idea that Ethiopian Jewry are Jews without conversion. He, unlike other the rabbis in Israel, argued that they require conversion. However, and this is the point I want to mention, due to the Mesirut Nefesh of the Ethiopian Jews in their process of making Aliyah, I'm sure people are aware, people know that thousands of Ethiopian Jews sacrificed their lives to make Aliyah, to be part of the Jewish community. Surely that itself proves that they are already in the process. Rav Moshe Feinstein points this out. One should always also know that even in the practical application of the law that they're not Jews, since they think they are Jews and sacrifice their lives for the Judaism, we are obligated to save them. Rav Moshe Feinstein is actually arguing that even according to him, who, and his opinion was that Ethiopian Jewry were not considered Jews, it's still the obligation of the Jewish state of Medinat Israel to save Ethiopian Jewry, because they have shared their destiny, I'm sorry, they shared their fate with the Jewish people, and therefore it is our responsibility to bring them here, to take care of them. They have already made the step forward, and we should embrace them and take it from there. I want to mention that there were some stories in the past where Israeli soldiers were killed, and only hours before the burial did they realize that the soldier was not halachically Jewish. And a whole debate began at the time whether or not they should be allowed to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. I'm not going into this discussion right now. It's a fascinating one. You should know, by the way, that today the custom is to bury them in a regular Jewish military cemetery here in this country. And part of the reason is because surely the fact that this soldier was wearing the Israeli uniform, he gave up his life for the Jewish people, he shared his fate with the Jewish people, surely that itself is a statement of identity. It may not be the identity that we can share him in a minyan and etc., but it's for sure a very big part of the gerut, of the converting process. And therefore, when we face today the Gerut crisis in this country, first of all, we have to change our attitude. It's true that hundreds of years, the past few hundreds of years, the policy has been to reject people who want to come into our community. We try to discourage them, and only if we make them go through a lot of difficulties, then at the end, they prove that they really want to become part of the Jewish people. Today, it's exactly the opposite. Not only should we not discourage these people, we should encourage them, we should embrace them, we should have dayanim, who are friendly, who are kind, who are sensitive, who realize that this is a national idea, a national task of accepting the gerim and bringing them into the Jewish people. And this, I believe, is also part of the kibbutz galuyot that we are living through the past 70 some years, where we see that Jews coming back to the land of Israel are coming many times, just like in the days of Ezra. They're coming back sometimes with mixed families, assimilated families. No one promised us that the kibbutz galuyot will be easy and chick-chack and it'll be very simple. But In this process, if we recognize the greatness of this wave of Aliyah, and we recognize that these people have entered the process of Gerut by identifying themselves as part of the Jewish nation, then the next step, whatever it might be right now, whatever we require with them from them on a religious level, should be much easier and lenient than if they were to come out of nowhere and ask us to convert. I just want to go back to the beginning of today's shiur. I said that the essence of Chag Shavuot is Kabbalah, Torah, and Gerut. Every Chag Shavuot, I believe, we are required to go back to Har Sinai and to accept upon ourselves the Torah. When we stand at Har Sinai, we are therefore going through the process of conversion. And if the conversion process is entering a covenant both of fate and destiny, then it's a reminder to all of us that being a Jew is not just about being someone who keeps Torah and mitzvot. Rather, it's also and firstly about being part of a nation, of being part of a people. From Pesach to Shavuot, we have the days of Sfira that connect that covenant of Egypt, which we did on Pesach, and the covenant of fate, of destiny, which we do on Chag Shavuot. But both together, and that's where Sfirat HaOmer brings both covenants together to one, both of these covenants make us into who we are, into the Jewish people. We are also part of a nation, and we are also obligated to keep Torah and mitzvot, and both together, those two covenants make up the Jewish identity. I want to wish everyone, I know hopefully I'll see you next week, but this was part of an idea for Chag Shavuot, to prepare ourselves for Chag Shavuot. And I want to thank Rabbi Kelman again for the shiur of Torah in Motion. It's wonderful to see so many people every week. I'm passing it over to Rabbi Kelman.